There's just something about a good detective story, which is why a recent piece in Deadline Detroit caught our attention. It was written by retired FBI agent Greg Stayskull. He was resident agent in charge of the Ann Arbor FBI office, which is how he found himself with the case of the missing meteorite. Greg, tell us about that call you got in August 1998. What do you remember about it?
Being in a small FBI office, a satellite office, Ann Arbor's a satellite office of Detroit, and we at that time covered five counties, and you would get a lot of different cases. And in this particular instance, I was talking to a guy that was a friend of mine, Detective McNulty, and when he called—
Was he of U of M campus police?
Yes. He was U of M, what they call the Department of Public Safety, and he was a detective for them. He called and said, hey, we were able to recover a meteorite that was stolen from the university. Well, I wasn't even aware one had been stolen, and it had only been stolen a few days before that. At any rate, he said, we've recovered it in New York. It was interesting the way they did it, because this is 1998. The internet's relatively new, and Detective McNulty was smart enough, and I think tech savvy enough, or somebody over there was, and they put out a bulletin on the internet, basically a picture of the meteorite, and fortunately the dealer in upstate New York saw this, basically BOL, be on the lookout for
this missing meteorite,
right? And he sees it. Well, it was big. It was 60 pounds. Now, meteorites are very dense because they're metal, and this one is primarily iron and nickel. But it was sort of in a horseshoe shape, a very big horseshoe, and weighed 60 pounds.
And so, taken from?
Taken from the University of Michigan Natural History Museum from the fourth floor.
Nothing you could put in your pocket or a purse.
No, or a backpack for that matter. We had a lot of speculation as to how it was done. At that time, their security was not what it is today. No video cameras. The only thing, the meteorite was out so, you know, kids could touch it and everything. And they had it basically tethered with a small cable that was bolted to the meteorite. All you had to do was cut the cable and figure out a way to get it out of the museum.
So here comes a call from a dealer in New York going, yes, I have it. And he was cooperative, right?
Yes, he was. Detective McNulty was a little bit concerned, you know, that he might get some pushback and stuff. But I said, well, I can call him. There is federal jurisdiction because this is stolen property, clearly. He knows it's stolen property and it's moved interstate. So I called him and I explained that to him. But he said, no, I don't want to have a stolen meteorite. And to his credit, as soon as he saw the bulletin, he called and contacted the museum and, of course, was able to identify that this was a stolen meteorite. And then he proceeded to give us a name, Stephen Collins, and an address near Ann Arbor.
And this was the person who sold it to him?
Yes, this was the person who sold it to him. But the name was relatively common. It was Stephen Collins. And we were thinking, oh, okay, this is not going to pan out. But, you know, it's a start. So we arranged to get the meteorite back. And we did some investigation, and lo and behold, there was a Stephen Collins living at that address. And as it turns out, he was on parole for having committed second-degree murder, which is kind of a good thing in the sense that it gives us a little bit of leverage because he's on parole. And actually, the very fact that he had left the state of Michigan put him in violation of his parole.
So strike one. What was his first story when you talked with him?
Well, his first story was he had run into a guy that he knew from prison, a fellow inmate, when he was doing time for this second-degree murder charge. You know, this guy said, hey, I've got a meteorite. I found it in Arizona. And
this was a former inmate.
That's what he's saying. Yeah. He says, and of course, we're looking at each other going, really? what are the chances of that? At any rate, as I said, we did some checking, and it turned out that we couldn't find anybody that even existed like that. But we also couldn't prove, didn't have sufficient evidence to show that it was, in fact, Stephen Collins that stole the meteorite from the museum.
And you write that a bad denial is almost as good as a confession. So you needed a bad denial, a better bad denial?
Correct. Detective McNulty's saying to me, you know, I don't think we can prosecute him for theft, because we don't have any evidence that he actually stole the meteorite. And, you know, there's a reasonable doubt at least, that he, you know, found it or bought it from somebody else. And I said, yeah, that's true. Why don't we do this, though? I think I could charge him, or we could charge him, the federal government, we could charge him with interstate transportation of stolen property, because he's taken stolen property and moved it from Michigan to New York and sold it to a dealer there. But I said, I'd like to have another shot in interviewing him and see if I can get him to make some admissions or tell us a weak story, a bad denial, so to speak.
Even weaker than the one he told you first. So you go back to him, make a second run.
I go back to him and I decide, you know, I don't want to go to his home, nor do I want to give him notice that I'm coming, because I'm afraid that he's either going to not want to talk to me or he's going to have an opportunity to prepare for my interview. And I want him to be as ill-prepared as possible. So I found out where he was working, and he was working on a construction site, and he was testing compaction of soil where they were grading and leveling a piece of land. So he was there, and he was pleasant. I introduced myself, and you know, he had seen me before, and I said, you know, I need to talk to you a little bit more about this. And he agreed to talk to me, and we sat in my car, and I talked to him about it. And I said, you know, your first story isn't working out. There's nobody by that name that did time with you, and none of this is really fitting together. And he said, well, you know, that's not really what happened. What happened was I was in a bar, and he said, and I didn't want to say that because it would be a violation of my parole to be in a bar. And I said, okay. And he said, but I ran into a guy in the bar, and we got to talking about rocks and geology, which, of course, is a common topic in most bars. And the guy says to him, hey, you know, I just happen to have a meteorite. And Stephen said, well, you know, I'd be interested in seeing that. And they go out to his car, and lo and behold, in his trunk is his 60-pound meteorite. And Stephen, being, you know, a rock collector, immediately recognizes it as, in fact, probably a meteorite. So he agrees to buy it. And he knows it's probably worth more than what this guy is asking. So they ended up agreeing. He said he paid him $300 or $400 for the meteorite. And, of course, ultimately he sold it in New York for over $1,000. In fact, with the trade and the actual cash, it was over $2,000. So he knew that meteorite was worth more. Then I followed up and I said, well, what was this guy's name? Gee, I don't know. And he gave me this real general, generic description of the guy that could fit about 1 million people. I said, well, what about his license plate? Was his car from out of state? I mean, you were in the trunk of the car. He said, you know, I didn't notice any documentation. I mean, you just paid him cash. Is that right? And he said, yeah. And I said, well, did you do up a bill of sale or anything like that? Or did you have any way of contacting him? No, no contact information. I said, well, okay. How about the bar? Was he a regular? Yeah, I don't know. So there was zero corroboration. And when we finished it, I said, you know, I'm having a hard time with this story, and I'm sure anybody else would too. So ultimately, we did, in fact, charge Stephen with interstate transportation of stolen property.
And what happened to him?
Well, first of all, his parole was violated because he not only – I mean, he obviously admitted to having been in a bar, but that was not the reason they violated his parole. They violated it because he crossed state lines, which is a violation of your parole. So he ended up doing about 2 more years on his second-degree murder charge. And then in addition to that, he was sentenced to 9 months federal custody for having, well, not stolen the meteorite, but transported a stolen meteorite. And when he was sentenced, he admitted to the judge that he knew the meteorite was stolen when he transported it. He did not ever admit to having stolen it.
So there's kind of a mystery. Number one, did he indeed steal it? I mean, as you say, it was a pretty bad denial. But the big question, whoever stole it, how did they get that thing out of the fourth floor, this big 60-pound meteor?
We speculated a lot, and we had a lot of theories. My theory was that he probably went in dressed as like a maintenance worker or somebody doing something, and all he had to do was cut the cable, like I say, on the meteorite. And if he had some type of cart or a dolly or something like that, he could have gotten it out. You know, if you act like you know what you're doing, a lot of times you can get away with a lot of things. And I suspect maybe that's what he, something along those lines. We were pretty well able to determine that it was not cooperation from anybody in the museum. It's just that I guess nobody really expected anybody to walk off with a 60-pound meteorite.
In a mystery from 17 years ago now, the case says of the missing meteorite, but safely back in the hands of the University of Michigan and back in display at the museum.
Yeah, so that was my X-file. So, as I said at the end of the story, the truth is out there.
Greg Stayskull is a retired FBI agent. You can find his story about the case of the missing meteorite at Deadline Detroit. Thanks so much for sharing it with us, Greg.
Well, thank you, Cindy. Thanks for having me.